The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network. I want to mention a great resource for writers, and this month's sponsor, Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories. I'll expound later in the show, but the short version is this long-awaited book about the craft of creative writing from New York Times bestselling author Steve Almond sets out to debunk the well-meaning but misguided myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and most honest work. Pick up a copy today of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, wherever you buy books, more soon. Greetings, scribes. I have got some exciting news to share. The Writer Files now has an exclusive Patreon community where subscribers will get exclusive access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and content from productivity and publishing experts each month. In the meantime, just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles. It's free to join Patreon to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something special.
In these circumstances, especially when we write something that we've spent a lot of time with or it's very important to us, you know, we suffer from the curse of knowledge. We know too much about it, and we also suffer from the curse of passion. We care a lot about it. And because of that, we don't often do the best we could in conveying the information. We're just too close to it. And so we really, the only antidote to the curse of knowledge and curse of passion is empathy. We really have to understand from the other person's perspective what's interesting and relevant about this. Similarly, the curse of knowledge and passion lead us to say much more than we need to. My mother has this wonderful saying. I know she didn't create it, but I try to live my life by it. And that is, tell the time, don't build the clock. Many of us are clock builders. We say much more than we need to say. And as a result, we lose people, they get disengaged, they get confused. So when pitching anything, it's important to understand what are the most salient and important parts of what I'm saying. How do I make that relevant and interesting to the person that I'm talking to? And ultimately, your goal in pitching a work to an agent or something of the like is to equip them to then turn around and be able to articulate it to others.
And welcome back to The Writer Files. I am your grateful host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and perseverance per usual. Stanford professor, communications expert, and author Matt Abrahams spoke with me about tips and tricks to hone your communication skills as a writer and his award-winning podcast, Think Fast, Talk Smart. Matt is a leading expert in communication with decades of expertise as an educator, author, podcast host, and coach. As a lecturer in organizational behavior at Stanford University's Graduate School of Business, he teaches popular classes in strategic communication and effective presenting. He also hosts Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the 2023 Webby Award-winning Best Business Podcast. The podcast has topped 42 million downloads and has been the number one career podcast in over 95 countries. Matt's the author of two books, including Think Faster, Talk Smarter, How to Speak Successfully When You're Put on the Spot, based in part on his hit podcast. Dan Pink, number one New York Times bestseller, said of the author, Matt has a gift for making complex concepts easy to understand and simple to enact. If you've ever struggled to summon the right words at the right time, this book is an essential read. In this file, Matt and I discussed the TED Talk that led to a podcast that led to a book. Why writers need to find their focus through structure. His advice on pitching your book to agents in person. How it's normal to be nervous. Managing anxiety. Why most writers suffer the curses of both knowledge and passion. How to nail that first book tour. And a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us. All right, we are rolling once again on The Writer Files, and I am honored today to be joined by an esteemed guest. We've got communications expert, Stanford professor Matt Abrahams is hanging out with us today. And yeah, I can't wait to talk about all things writing and this fantastic, interesting career of yours. But yeah, well, how's it going over there? Where in the world are you today, Matt?
I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it is a pleasure to chat with you, Kelton. I look forward to the conversation.
For sure. I can't wait to talk about the podcast, of course. Think fast, talk smart. And I understand we share some colleagues and some peers there at the Podglomerate.
Yes, we do.
But yeah, also want to talk about writing and the writing life and this fantastic book of yours. So talk about a little bit about like what came first, the chicken or the egg, because we've got this award-winning, Webby-winning podcast, this very popular podcast, Think Fast, Talk Smart. And then your affiliation with that. And as the host, you know, you've got a lot of balls in the air as a lecturer also. But talk about the book also, like, again, kind of, did that spring from the podcast?
Yeah. So I did a talk several years ago that went online and did very well. And the talk was called Think Fast, Talk Smart. And when the business school was looking to initiate podcasting, they really hadn't done any formal podcasting. They had seen that the content around communication resonated well. So they asked, they said, would you be willing to do an experiment and try a podcast? And I have learned in my life to rarely turn down opportunities. So I said, yes. And that's how it was born. And we started in January of 2020, a couple months before the world shut down, and people started really listening to podcasts. People were curious about communication at that time, given that it was totally and dramatically changing. And so we found an audience, and ever since then have been growing it and have really, really enjoyed it. As a result, one of the big topics that we talked about was something that I'd been working on with my students, which is this notion of how to speak better in the moment, spontaneous speaking, not planned, like when you have a slide deck or a pitch that you've rehearsed, but in the moment, answering questions, giving feedback, making small talk. And as a result of the podcast and exploring it there and the work I'd done with my students, that's what led to the book. And we're not very creative with names. So the book is simply Think Faster, Talk Smarter. There will be no Think Fastest, Talk Smartest. We're stopping there.
Okay. I see the iterations of
yes.
East. Yes. Well, that's cool. Okay. So the podcast came first, but of course, you've had this illustrious career prior to that. But yeah, talk a little bit about your superhero origins, because before obviously you were an author and you have written another book in addition to the one you just mentioned. But yeah, talk some about your career and like what led you to this path. Of course, as a communications expert, and you've been an educator, an author, and coach, but talk a little bit about this kind of winding path for you.
Sure. So, you know, I started in school thinking I was going to be a doctor. I met calculus and chemistry, and they convinced me otherwise. And as a result, I was taking other classes, and I fell in love with psychology and communication in particular. I've always been fascinated by it. When I reflect back as a young boy, I was fascinated by communication. There's a story when my mother wanted to have a garage sale. My brother and I had so many toys and so much crap around. She just wanted to get rid of it. And I grew up in a community where there were lots of garage sales. And my mother said, hey, we have to make our garage sale stand out. So she instructed my brother and me to misspell the word garage. And if you insert a B in the middle of the word garage, you get garbage. So we had a garbage sale. Everybody else was having a garage sale. And we did better than anybody that weekend. And it was upon reflecting that I realized, you know, words, language, communication matters. It can influence people. It can help people. And so from a young age, that was interesting. And in college, when I rediscovered that and then went on to grad school, came out and worked in high tech for a decade. I ran learning and development, where among my many responsibilities was training, but also documentation. Writing was something that I had done and learned to do a little bit more there. And then I had the great fortune to return to my true passion, which is teaching. And I had seen the value of communication in my research. And then in the real world, in the corporate world, I saw how important communication was in terms of success of ideas, of businesses. And so I was really pleased to be able to start teaching communication skills to help people. So that's sort of my arc. All of it has been led by just my passion for communication.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, yeah, and congrats on the successes. Obviously,
thank you.
Some other authors and speakers to kind of tame some of this anxiety that I think many of us confront when faced with, you know, obviously speaking in public is one thing, but then the creative process, which also, you know, involves quite a few of the same neurobiological triggers. But yeah, I know, just as a communications expert, I would just kind of love to take this moment to pick your brain about some things that could really help authors in this, you know, in this particular milieu. But, you know, I understand like one of your hacks for kind of taming the fear of like, just say the blank page, we're just getting started, you know, and not only going back to like figuring out who our audience is. I know you talk quite a bit about this.
Yes, yes.
Focusing on who we're writing for, but also some other hacks to either taming the creative anxiety, getting words onto the page, and then obviously kind of finding that direction. I don't know, give us a few tips and tricks to start out on just how you do it, how you did it. Earlier in the show, I mentioned an invaluable resource for writers. Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories based on 3 decades of writing, failing, and trying again. Author Steve Almond is a beloved professor at Harvard and Wesleyan and the acclaimed New York Times bestseller of 12 books of fiction and nonfiction. And in Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, Steve employs the radical empathy he displayed as a co-host of the Dear Sugars podcast with Cheryl Strayed, where they explored the joys and trials of storytelling to explode myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and truest work. The book includes chapters on plot, character, and chronology, but travels far beyond the earnest intentions of most craft books. It also includes writing prompts to generate new work. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Richard Russo called it one of the best books on writing he's ever read, and also the funniest. Pick up a copy of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories wherever you buy books, and add it to your TBR today. And just a quick aside to revisit the exclusive Writer Files Patreon community, where subscribers get access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and a lot more. I know that for serious writers, it can be more distracting than ever to cut through the noise, stay productive, and home in on what's happening in the publishing industry. Over 8 years, we've provided a looking glass into the habits of professional writers and publishing industry insiders. And as your humble host, I've decided to launch a membership-based Patreon for serious scribes to cut through the noise, swap tips and tricks, and hang out with like-minded peers. Just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles for bonus writing resources, monthly episode breakdowns, writer's happy hour, a community of your peers, ad-free episodes, and more. It's free to join to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something cool and special. Keep calm and write on.
Well, interestingly, for your audience, I'm a very nervous writer. Writing is very, very hard for me. I would much rather speak than write. And there are people like me, but I think it's typically the opposite, where people are more comfortable writing because of the editing and the thought, the time to think about it. There's something about the permanence of words on a page, be it a web page, a virtual page, or a written, you know, a physical page, that's really intimidating to me. But the way in which I start in any endeavor of communication is really to think about what is my goal? What am I trying to achieve? And really help myself focus and prioritize. To me, a goal has 3 parts: information, emotion, and action. What do I want my audience to think? How do I want them to feel? What do I want them to do? And starting there really helps me focus. A lot of people in my experience just itemize and list things. There's no prioritization and often a lack of focus. So starting with a goal is critical. And then once you have a goal that's appropriate for the audience you're writing for, you obviously have to make adjustments and tweak. Then from that point on, it's about finding a way to structure it, a narrative arc that makes sense given the topic, given the goal, given the audience. So that's really the way I start. Once I have an idea, it's how do I take that idea? What's my goal with it for the audience I'm speaking to? And then how do I structure it?
Yeah, that's great. And I think, you know, depending on whether you're a fiction author or a nonfiction author, there are plenty of books on finding that structure, you know, storytelling and kind of the hero's journey and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, we've taken quite a few hacks from screenwriters, because screenwriters come on and talk about how different writing for the screen is, how different writing a spec script is versus, you know, writing a novel, where you know, you're the director, you're the actors, you're the set designers, you know, and you have an infinite budget as a fiction author. And you really have to kind of tame that desire to, you know, paint every scene with every brush in your color in your palette. But that's great. Those are great. That's great advice. Information, emotion, action, and finding structure and focus, of course. But then, you know, I think moving into kind of honing the big idea, and then, you know, you talk quite a bit about persuasion, and persuasion is such a big part.
Yeah.
You know, kind of everything that we do, because, you know, once we set out to get this book into the hands of an agent, you know, there is that part of, oh my gosh, now I actually have to sell this idea to somebody, because that is what we do, you know, in the publishing industry. We have to kind of hone that pitch. So talk a little bit about, the importance of, I don't know if it's like rubber ducking these ideas or, you know, finding a way to kind of tame this desire to like spill all, you know, like explain the whole thing, when really we have to sit down.
Yeah.
Or go to a conference, sit down in front of an actual real life agent and pitch this thing in a matter of like just a few minutes.
Yes. So pitching is really hard. And many of us in these circumstances, especially when we write something that we've spent a lot of time with, or it's very important to us, you know, we suffer from the curse of knowledge. We know too much about it. And we also suffer from the curse of passion. We care a lot about it. And because of that, we don't often do the best we could in conveying the information. We're just too close to it. And so the only antidote to the curse of knowledge and curse of passion is empathy. We really have to understand from the other person's perspective what's interesting and relevant about this. Similarly, the curse of knowledge and passion lead us to say much more than we need to. My mother has this wonderful saying. I know she didn't create it, but I try to live my life by it. And that is, tell the time, don't build the clock. Many of us are clock builders. We say much more than we need to say. And as a result, we lose people, they get disengaged, they get confused. So when pitching anything, it's important to understand what are the most salient and important parts of what I'm saying. How do I make that relevant and interesting to the person that I'm talking to? And ultimately, your goal in pitching a work to an agent or something of the like is to equip them to then turn around and be able to articulate it to others. Often the person you're initially pitching to is not the person that has the final say. So they have to think about it. They have to run it by other people. And so part of the pitch is not just to get them to understand, but get them to be able to repeat in a reliable way what you said. And that's where structure comes in. And I think a wonderful structure that people could use for selling their works or explaining their works is answering three simple questions. What, so what, now what? What, so what, now what? The what is what your story is about, or what it's striving to do. The so what is why it's important and relevant. And the now what is what you'd like to do in the interaction. Maybe it's, can I tell you more? Can I show you something? Can I set up another meeting with you? So simply by answering the three questions, what, so what, now what, you get a relatively tight explanation of what you're saying. And the person you're talking to should be able to take that information, since it's packaged so well, and repeat it in a way that's favorable to you. So there's a lot of work that has to go into that, but it can be very useful.
Yeah, that's great. And there's plenty of examples of how to craft a pitch, you know, be it for fiction or nonfiction, especially when you're kind of using those industry standards, which agents look for. And speak a very specific language. But then going back to your work, and the importance of some of the neuroscience behind it, I think, as you put it, empathy and being able to convey ideas in a very kind of a human manner, because it's a business of people, right? And what these people want to know is that, like, you're somebody that is going to be trustworthy, or is it somebody that's, you know, in it, serious player, you know, like somebody who's going to actually, you know, commit to the long haul, or, you know, turning your writing into a business.
Absolutely. Yes. And that commitment and conviction are palpable. People can feel that. They can see that. And so being confident in what you're going to say helps you come across as more confident and competent. And so it's important to think these things through. A lot of us just go in and say, I know my work. I've written it. I know it. I've lived it. I can communicate it well. That actually sets you up for problems. So really spending time and being judicious about how will I pitch this? How will I explain this can really help you.
Good stuff, Matt. Thanks for taking the time to do this.
Yeah.
I think pitching in person is probably something that would cause some writers anxiety. And obviously going to these conferences, I think, is important for making those connections, not only with obviously the publishing industry folks, but also with other authors and, you know, being able to rub elbows and share ideas. But talk a little bit about some of the, because this is something you talk about at length, is just, I don't know, just managing that anxiety of that piece of like sitting there with an agent, you know, somebody who's, you know, it's potentially judging you based on your, you know, it's not based on your manuscript. It's really, really literally based on the 3 minutes you have to, again, show that commitment, show that conviction. Talk about some of these, you know, really cool hacks that you've come up with. And I'm sorry that I called them hacks, but
I call them hacks too. Hacks, unlocks. I think that's all acceptable. First and foremost, it is completely normal and natural to get nervous in these circumstances. It is the rare person who isn't. There are things we can do to manage this. You know, those of us who study anxiety around speaking truly believe it's innate to being human. Whenever we put ourselves out there in that way, it invokes anxiety. And anxiety is that fight or flight response. It's our body trying to protect us from threat. And there are two ways, really, of addressing it. One is through managing the symptoms. That's what happens to your body. And then there are the sources that initiate it. So for me, symptomatically, I blush and perspire when I get nervous. Kelton, what happens to you when you get nervous speaking in front of others?
I mean, I think it's very similar. It definitely, you get a little, I think it's a little ping of like adrenaline, right?
Right. Yeah. And it has manifestation. Maybe your heart beats faster. Maybe you get a little shaky. Your mouth gets dry. Those are all very normal responses. And there are things we can do to manage it. I'll share just a couple. One, take deep belly breaths. This really is the way that seems to work most for most people, which is deep breaths. If you've ever done yoga or Tai Chi, where you're really filling your lower abdomen. The key is not the inhale, interestingly. It's the exhale that makes all the difference. So you want your exhale to be twice as long as your inhale. And if you do it two or three times, you actually slow down your heart rate, slow down your breathing rate, which slows down your speaking rate, reduces some of the shakiness. So that's one thing to do. The other thing to do is focus on your movement. Movement is important. When we get shaky, that's adrenaline. Adrenaline's trying to move us from threat to safety. So if you move purposefully, like stepping in if you're standing up in front of people, gesturing when you're speaking if you're seated, these are all ways to give that adrenaline a place to go and to help you feel better about it. So there are things we can do to manage symptoms. Now, the sources are another thing. These are the things that initiate and exacerbate anxiety. And one of the biggest ones is the fact that we want our communication to be perfect. We put so much pressure on ourselves when we're in these high-stakes situations. We want to do it right. I'm here to tell you, there is no right way to communicate. There are better and worse ways, but there is no one right way. And striving for that right way actually reduces the likelihood that we're going to do well. This is the same reason why memorizing what you're going to say actually works against you. Your brain only has limited bandwidth. And if you are splitting that bandwidth with part of it focusing on, am I saying it right? Is this what I intended to say? Is this the best way to say it? Or if I've memorized, tracking literally word for word, am I saying it that way? That all gets in your way of actually being effective in your communication. So it is better to focus on connecting to the audience, getting your point across. What do they need? Instead of, am I saying it the right way? So by dialing down that perfection, that evaluation, we actually dial up our ability to connect and relate and adapt. So I like to say strive for connection, not perfection, and that actually reduces your anxiety. So by managing symptoms and sources, we can feel more comfortable and confident in our communication.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. It's always kind of funny I've noticed in watching speakers speak and what, going to talks is sometimes when there's that initial gaffe or like something unexpected happens, but you can get a laugh out of it and just kind of go with it as opposed to, letting it kind of throw you off. There's something really natural and like it kind of relieves some tension just even in the room. Like, oh, this is like a normal person just having a normal gaffe. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, no, it humanizes people. There's actually some research that says that after a mistake, people like you more because of that humanization. That doesn't mean you should purposely make mistakes. And I always like to tell this story. I read something about Yo-Yo Ma, the famous cellist, who's amazing. I had the opportunity to see him once. And he said something that he said this, and I'm paraphrasing. The music doesn't come alive for him until he makes his first mistake. And that blew my mind for a couple of reasons. One, Yo-Yo Ma makes mistakes. That just blew my mind. And second, that he actually embraces those mistakes, and those mistakes make it alive for him. So not only does making a mistake or not doing as well as you want help you or allow you an opportunity to actually really lean into it and be human, but it also, for others seeing it, it's not as bad. In fact, it can be endearing if depending on the circumstance. So yeah, I get what you're saying.
Well, you coming from the world of, having helped some heavy hitters, TED Talks and the World Economic Forum and Nobel Prize presentations.
Yeah.
There is this one little, venue that's a little bit different, and it's just the book reading. Go out on that first tour maybe with your baby and you care and you have this this love for your book, and you want to show this commitment to this thing, and you're sitting in it, so it's a little bit smaller venue. But yeah, I don't know. Is there anything you could address to authors who are maybe going out on that first book tour?
Yeah.
You've probably been out on a book tour.
I certainly have. And I've worked with a number of authors because many authors feel very uncomfortable just communicating in front of people. The reason they like to write is it's a bit of a secluded way of communicating. So yes, so one is how you frame the situation. This is an opportunity just to chat and just to connect. And so if you put a lot of pressure on, like, this is a performance feeds into that whole I've got to do it right thing. No, you're just having a conversation. Imagine, if you will, and in fact, this can be a very useful technique. In advance, visualize your audience before you go in. You can go online and see the venue that you're speaking in, so you can have an idea of what it looks like. By visualizing, you actually desensitize yourself to the actual circumstance that you find yourself in. So you can actually do some things to help yourself. So visualize it, remind yourself that this is just a conversation. A great way to do this is to really think about how you start. The starting is what makes people most nervous. And if you actually take just a few moments to connect with the audience and do something that engages them, maybe you take a poll. How many of you have ever been to a similar place that my characters go? Or it might be some kind of activity where you say, hey, turn to the person next to you and share the first thing that comes to mind after you've read my book or something. Get them doing something. And in doing that, you then become a participant with them, a facilitator of the interaction, not a presenter where the spotlight is on you. And for many people, that's transformational because it changes from I am presenting and you are evaluating me to we are collaborating on this shared experience. So anything you can do to break down that wall, to desensitize yourself in advance, and to remind yourself that it's a conversation will help you feel better at it. And by the way, you should practice reading out loud. A lot of people, go back to elementary school when you had to read out loud, and that was hard. Yeah, if you're not used to it, you have to practice it because it can be very distracting. I read my audiobook, and I wrote the words, and yet it was hard for me to read. So practice reading out loud.
That's cool. Yeah, man. Yeah, well, that audiobook, I think, talk a little bit about just that, if you will, in a nugget, like what that experience was like reading your own words for that amount of time, because I understand it's like a little bit challenging.
Yes, no, it is. And it's challenging for many reasons. So when I read my audiobook, it was a very hot week in July. I'm in a sound booth that's very small, and we couldn't run the air conditioning because it would be picked up by the microphone. So I'm like in a sauna reading the book, and there's somebody in your ear who is tracking with you, who lets you know if you make any mistakes. The expectation is you will read every word as they are written. And that's hard. It's hard for me because I do a lot of free flow communication where I'm speaking in the moment. So it was really hard to stick to a script. The average, I'll just give you some real quick statistics. The average voice artist who reads books professionally reads about 20 pages a day. I read 9. And so it took us a long time, but I got faster. By the end, I was up to about 16.
That's cool.
Yeah. So the bottom line is practice. If you're going to do a reading, practice what you're reading.
Amazing. All right. Well, we appreciate your time so much, Matt. I'm going to link to your home base, of course, mattabrahams.com. And that all the stuff, all the socials. And of course, congrats on this award-winning podcast and our friends at the Podglomerate, this 2023 Webby Award-winning Best Business Podcast. I mean, millions of downloads, number one career podcast in like 95 plus countries. Congrats on that. Think fast, talk smart. I'll link to that, of course. And then, yeah, this fantastic book, How to Speak Successfully When You're Put on the Spot, titled Think Faster, Talk Smarter. And all of your advice is really, really great. Thanks for your words, your wisdom, taking the time to do this today. Of course, anything you want to leave authors with today, your final kind of nugget of wisdom on just how to persevere.
Well, Kelton, first, thank you. It's been a pleasure to chat with you. You have such a wonderful voice. So to leave just a little bit of advice, you know, authors are very focused on and appreciate the value of the written word. And we have to give equal weight to the spoken word as well. And so taking time to hone and develop your spoken oral communication is really important, and it can augment and enhance the written work that you do. And I encourage all of you to take the time to share your writing, not just in the words on the page, but in how you talk about it. So spend that time. It's time well worth it, and it will help you get your word out there.
All right, Matt, again, thank you. I could probably pick your brain all day, but we'll have to conclude and chat again in the future. But best of luck out there, and we'll catch you again.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm.